Well, there goes the neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen, and we are thrilled to take ourselves out west, even further west than Greeley, Colorado, which is where we're located these days, and to talk to people who have made a wonderful career of sharing the music of the old and somewhat new west. They've been on TV. Listen to some of the credits of these folks. They've made 6,000-plus concert appearances since their very first in 1977. They played at Carnegie Hall and the Hollywood Bowl and, of course, the Union Colony Civic Center right here in Greeley, Colorado, which is right up there with those other two spots. They just played Durango, Colorado this past week. You've seen them on TV. They had a children's show on CBS a few years back, and they are official members of the Grand Ole Opry. They've also got 2 Grammy Awards on their shelves for the companion CDs for Toy Story 2 and Monsters, Inc. They've got a brand new album out called The Land Beyond the Sun. They are Too Slim, Ranger Doug, Joey the Cowpolka King, and not part of this interview, but we can't leave out Woody Paul as well. They are Riders in the Sky, and we welcome them to the neighborhood. Hi, folks!
Hey, how you doing, Dave? Great to be here in the neighborhood with you. This is Too Slim speaking, here aboard the Riders in the Sky bus to prosperity here.
The bus to prosperity.
We're in the town of Bozeman, Montana.
Ooh-wee. And you really do have to cross back and forth. How many days a year do you spend touring? What's your percentage of going back and forth?
I think that statistically it works out to about every other day. It's about 175 days a year and has been for nearly 34 years.
Wow. Does that get tougher as you guys get older and have families and other things to deal with than it did back in the 70s, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, we've all had a number of families, and so So I guess you could say, yes, it is. But, you know, we still love to do it. That's key. I mean, we're still, amazingly enough, we're still friends, and we still like to travel, and we still like to play. Mostly we like to play. That's the best part. The travel can get old, but the playing is wonderful. And I think, actually, my personal opinion is that the older we get, the better it gets, because it's richer. You know, it's a richer experience.
You can find deeper meaning in the songs, or you just are more comfortable on stage, or what?
I think we can.
What?
The guys are throwing things at me now. But I think, you know, you sing Grab Your Saddle Horn and Blow, it means something different now when you're 63 than when you're 31, so I think it's...
I'm not going there. I don't know what... I'm still not sure what that means. Okay.
But I really think it's true. I think that we do something that's unique and different and being part of the musical landscape and keeping this tradition alive. We've always wanted to further the tradition as well as keep the old songs alive. So we're always creating songs, writing songs. We have a brand new album out so there's always something going on. It keeps it fresh. It keeps us interested. Keeps the audience interested. And that's why we're still here after all this time.
Well, the new album is called The Land Beyond the Sun. Who's the, I had it in front of me and now I don't, but what's the label on that and where can people get it?
They can get it at ridersinthesky.com, mm-hmm. And which is our website, and they can either download it there through CD Baby or they can buy copies directly from us, or it's also in some of the finer record stores around the country. And or they can bring it to come to one of our shows and purchase it there, and we'll be glad to autograph it for them.
And it may even be in some of the not-so-fine record stores across the country, just in case.
I hope so.
You're living near a bad record store, maybe they have it. It's worth a look. And the concept behind The Land Beyond the Sun, was there a thing of... It's not really a gospel record, although there's a sense of spirituality kind of running through it. Was it one particular member's idea, or how did that all come about?
Would you like to speak to Ranger Doug about this?
I would love to speak to Ranger Doug about this, yes.
All right, here he is. Ranger Doug, the question has been asked about the spiritual album. Hello.
Howdy, Ranger Doug.
How are you?
I'm great. Great to talk to all of you. And I was asking specifically about the new album, The Land Beyond the Sun, and the idea of it being kind of a spiritual album. Not heavily gospel, but, you know, it's in there.
Right.
So whose idea and how did it come about?
It was really the fans' idea, because I think people associate the West with kind of a closeness to nature and closeness to a higher power, because you see the beauty of the West around you, and it's reminiscent of that extremely. And also because people associate harmony singing, which we do for a living, with songs of inspiration, and so our fans have been after us for years to do it. And that was really the primary thing, to please the people who come to our shows.
And I think you did a Christmas record a few years back as well, didn't you?
Yes, we've done two. Uh-huh.
Oh, two of them. Sorry, I'm not up on my Christmas records, possibly
right,
because my last name's Lefkowitz.
Columbia label and one on the Rounder label.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Rounder, of course, is a great folk label, and you've done a few CDs for them, which is cool. Can I ask about the origin and phenomenon of the singing cowboy? Was it Roy Rogers the first one, or was he just the most famous, or how did that happen?
Oh, well, I could go on forever. In fact, I have in my book called Singing in the Saddle, where it all started and came from, but...
the short version.
Short version,
yeah.
Right. The cowboys' Western movies were popular when they were silent, and they of course, started making motion pictures in sound in 1929, and it seemed just like a logical thing to include some singing with that sound. In fact, of course, the first movie in sound was a jazz singer, so people were very interested in seeing and hearing music on screen, which they'd never been able to do before.
So was it a Hollywood invention? It wasn't like the cattlemen would be on their steers out west in New Mexico or Durango or whatever it is.
Not at all. There was a whole tradition in literature and in fact of cowboy singers out on the range, and people associated cowboys and singing and campfires, and so that's what made it so natural for Hollywood to use it as an image and a sound. So it was a very natural thing. People accepted it very well. It was never big until 1933. 34 when Gene Autry appeared cameo role in a Ken Maynard Western, and that led to his own series, which became one of the most top stars in Hollywood, record seller, radio star, movie star, you name it. He was everything back there in the 30s and 40s.
I mean, it's not as if
followed him among many, Tex Ritter and Jimmy Wakely and many of the other ones, Rex Allen.
Do you have a particular idol or one that you most modeled yourself after early in your career?
Well, as a kid, I loved Tex Ritter just because he seemed more like the real deal. Hmm. As an adult, I would say the Sons of the Pioneers, definitely, because they combined incredibly gifted songwriting with incredibly precise singing and fantastic musicianship.
What? Oh, I'm hearing something there. Actually, I have a question for Joey the Cow Polka King. We don't want to leave him out of the conversation, and it is also a musical kind of a question. So if you could hand the phone off, Ranger Doug, to Joey the Cow Polka King. I'll be back with you. I'll probably pass this around a couple of times, like an old beer bottle. Just gentle with the phone there.
Hello there. How are you?
Hello, Joey the Cow Polka King. I wanted to welcome you, first of all, to the neighborhood. Welcome all of the writers in the sky. And I had a specific question for you, since you are... What's the thing that you call yourself with the accordion? It's the... There's a wonderful...
Steinway? The Stomach Steinway?
The Stomach Steinway. I love that.
Waistline Wurlitzer? Whatever you like.
Let me ask, how would you define the differences between what we consider country music versus Western swing?
Well, the way I look at it is that country music is wonderful, but Western music is really good.
Okay, that's a lesser sort of a thing.
Western music really is about the wide open spaces, about being one with nature, and being one with the much bigger picture. So it's a wonderful thing. And country music, of course, is Loretta Lynn said it so well. There's only two things that make good country songs: writing about Jesus or writing about divorce, and that was it.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, Jesus was driving the bus when he hit my ex-wife, and there's a song right
there. Exactly. And then you could do that to talk backwards, and we'll have a happy ending.
Oh, exactly.
Especially the cowboy music that we play is Riders in the Sky.
Yeah.
Now, there are different types of cowboy music. The Lone Cowboy on the Prairie singing Red River Valley with just his guitar using open chords.
Mm-hmm.
And then the songs in the stylings of the Sons of the Pioneers and Andy Parker and the Plainsmen. And, you know, the Silver Screen cowboy music, which really is an amalgamation of jazz as well as folk music and really all kinds of music. It's we found this to be kind of a cute sometimes to augment our recordings. We'll get a guitar player from Nashville, you know, great guitar player, great country guitar player, who's peripherally heard the cowboy music, and then when he sits down to do the recording and sees all the chords that are there, it's just like jazz. I mean, it is jazz. What Ranger Doug does on the guitar is basically the same thing that Freddie Green did with the Count Basie Orchestra.
Oh, my gosh. See, it never occurred to me, but at the same time, if we think about the permutations of country music through from the early stuff of Hank Williams and then that generation, Patsy Cline, and the modernization and what it sounds like now, and also the mainstreaming of it, I don't think, is it true that Western swing has not kind of gone that way? I mean, you guys, the way you make your music would still have sounded almost the same in 1960 or 1940.
Yes, if we were to have appeared in the movies back in the 30s and 40s, our music would have not changed very much. The only thing that, and as Slim told you before, the thing that we try to do is to not, and Ranger Doug coined this phrase, we try not to be a museum piece, you know, and that's why we're constantly writing new songs and trying new things. But yes, basically the style is that of the Silver Screen Cowboys. If they took us magically, they transported us to that movie studio and put us in the movie, and you were to see it, it would be just like Andy Parker and the Plainsmen, especially the Sons of the Pioneers. That's what we're going for anyway, you know, in our way.
Riding through the neighborhood, it's Ranger Doug, Too Slim, and Joey the Cow Polka King, three of the four performers who make up Riders in the Sky. We're talking with Joey Miskelin, a.k.a. Joey the Cow Polka King. I hope I got that last name right, by the way. Is it Miskelin?
You are so right. You are so perfect.
Got it. Excellent. I'm just so used to people mispronouncing mine that I hate mispronouncing others. You were not in the original incarnation of Riders in the Sky. How did you meet the guys, at what point, and how did you all hook up?
Well, that's a great story. There was a friend of ours, a mutual friend in Escanaba, Michigan. This fellow loved Riders, and he knew me from all my years with recording with the Frank Yankovic and other bands, as well as polka bands and pop bands, Doc Severinsen and people like that. And he sort of put us together. He sent me a tape of the Riders, and he sent Riders a tape of me. And I was doing a benefit at in Nashville, and so was Slim. Slim was doing a benefit. He was sitting with the Dickie Lee Band, a band he played with at one point. And after the job was over, you know, he came up and he said, "Well, are you Joey, the one who played with Yankovic?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm too Slim." I said, "Oh, from Riders in the Sky." And shortly after that, we got a call to do a recording with the Riders. It was Riders Radio Theater, the record that was on MCA at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. I'd moved to Nashville after being on the road for 25 years, and it was so much fun to play again and this wonderful musical camaraderie. And they asked me if I would appear again on the radio show, and then that led to a regular spot, and then time went by and blah, 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 but we ended up together, and here we are. And it's just amazing. Four people coming from such varied backgrounds that, you know, that always individually love cowboy music. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that is the other thing that people might not realize, that members of Rider in the Sky, one has a doctorate, you come from different kind of musical backgrounds. I wanted to ask about some of the people that you, Joey the Cow Polka King, you have played on albums. It says, I guess, in your bio on Wikipedia, you played on a Paul McCartney record?
Well, I appeared with Paul McCartney on one of the Johnny Cash records. It was Water from the Wells at Home. John and Paul and Tom T. Hall wrote a song when they were at John's house in Jamaica, and I was executive producer on I think we did four or five albums with John on Mercury.
Johnny Cash.
Of course, sang on it, and Tom T. And John. But the amazing thing is not that. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people that have recorded with Paul over the years, but did you know that Too Slim is the man
who
really started the Paul is Dead rumor?
I was gonna get to that. That's right. I don't know whether to wait. You know what? Tell me one cool, great, funny, bad, any kind of anecdote that you can, either about Paul McCartney or Frankie Yankovic, for that matter. One memory.
I'll tell you, of all the hundreds of recording sessions that I've done with many people, the scariest moment in the studio was I was recording with you two. We were making a movie called Rattle and Hum, and we were at Sun Studios, and I was playing V3 organ. And I had arranged the horn parts for the Memphis horns, and I arranged them in the classical way. Every part was written in the transpose key for that particular instrument. And the Count Don Bono went, "All right, let's do it." Larry Mullen went, "One, two." The song was "Angel of Harlem." One, two, three, four, and the horns came in, and it was complete dissonance. And I wanted to crawl underneath the organ bench. And Bono looked at me and said, "Is there a problem?" And I went, "Gee, I don't think so." And so I went to the horn players, and they were so used to having a piano player just sketch out a horn part that they in turn would transpose.
Oh yeah.
Retransposing my transposition, and once we figured that out, everything was great. But that's my funniest studio thing. But if you're on the road with us, there are funny things that happen every single day with Riders in the Sky. It's still great, and truly very satisfying musically.
Well, I want to get to a bunch of the stories from all of you of great things that have happened on the road. But as you said, Joey, I do have to ask Too Slim about how he started the greatest rock and roll fraud rumor in the history of rock. So if you can get Too Slim back on the phone, please.
Turn you over to Too Slim.
Thank you.
I hope that we won't lose this connection as we go through the mountains here in Bozeman. But it was a pleasure talking with you, and here is Too Slim. Man of many hats.
Is that hat thing? Hello, Fred. Hello. Well, I should call you Mr. Slim, I guess. But
that's fine. Whatever.
Cannot, of course, not mention that big bio on you on Wikipedia that Joey just mentioned that involves your college years. Just take it. I'm sure you've told the story a zillion times. Please tell it a zillion and one. How did the Abbey Road thing, what happened? Hello?
I was working for the student newspaper in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Abbey Road came out, and I was doing music reviews, and they assigned me to review that record. So I was working, I was thinking about that, and happened to be driving across southern Michigan. I heard a radio show out of Detroit, Uncle Russ Gibbs' radio show, and a guy called in the radio show and said, "What's going on with Paul? Something's wrong with Paul." And because of these things that were appearing on the record covers. And there were like two or three examples. And it was so funny and eerie. And so I went home and wrote my review and created this whole scenario where Paul had been killed and replaced in the Beatles. And then this information had been released to the world through clues that were buried into the album covers and actually in the music itself.
Because he was, his back was to the band or to us on Sgt. Pepper, and he's barefoot on Abbey. What were some of the others? I don't even remember way back when.
Oh, there were tons of them. He's wearing a black carnation and everybody else is wearing white. He's barefoot on the Abbey Road. I just made up out of whole cloth a lot of ridiculous clues and some are not mine. Some of the Turn Me On Dead Man, that was not mine. The 28 Gift was not mine. But a lot of the other stuff that's sort of become part of the lore of it is I just made it up, and I thought it was satirical and funny. But it just became this worldwide phenomenon that sort of scared me.
Especially, this was the time before the internet. This was the time when you could tweet something, and then it would get all over the world in an hour. This happened to you, and you took credit for it. Did you want to hide, or did you get a lot of flack?
I did want to hide. And initially, yeah. Once the initial fun of it was over, and I realized everybody was taking it seriously, and people were calling the newspaper in tears, and I was getting all these calls from all over the world saying, "Well, what's the story here? Is he really dead?" It's like, it's not a news story, you know? And I would say, it's all true. I made it all up, you know, and stuff like that. And so it just went on and on, and it's become this sort of footnote in rock and roll history.
Wow. Well, I mean, I can't say it's something to be proud of, but in a weird way, it kind of is.
It is amusing in a way. I never wanted to make any money off it, so I never gone to any of the
conventions,
Beatles conclaves and whatnot to try and make any money off it. I've never done a book. My wife says you need to write a book and tell your own side of the story. So maybe someday I'll do that. I don't know. But yeah, but it was weird because here's my great idol. You know, Paul McCartney is a huge idol to me,
sure.
and as a bass player, certainly as a musician and as a songwriter, and as a member of the band with the greatest chemistry and the greatest communication with an audience in my lifetime, certainly. And here I am saying he's dead, you know. And then so my great idol is having to go around denying that he's dead.
Thanks to you.
But I always thought they should send me a fruit basket or something because I helped them sell millions of records.
Well, wait a minute. Actually, let me think.
People bought those records and played them backwards and then had to go buy them again. So, yeah, I always thought that a little acknowledgement would be nice.
Hey, did you ever, now that I think about it, did you ever ask Joey, since he played with Paul at one point, if he told Paul, hey, by the way, the guy who started this is in my band? Or do not.
This was before that happened. Before I knew Joey.
Wow.
So, yeah, Paul did an album in the '90s. Paul's Alive. Paul's, you know, so he's clearly in on the joke. He clearly thinks it's funny, and so that's all I've ever. You know, as long as they get the joke, they understand that they can think I'm a Looney Tune or whatever. But it's funny. People still think it's true. I still get communications from people who still think it's true.
Good
and
Lord.
There's new evidence, you know? I mean, it goes on. There's a whole website several websites that have new information, and this is being proved beyond the shadow of a doubt by Italian scientists that it cannot be the original Paul McCartney. So it just goes on, you know?
Hey, there are people who say that George Harrison and John Lennon are dead. You know, and I keep having to say, they're there.
I know.
They're just resting,
so,
yeah.
My greatest fear is that when Paul actually, God rest his soul, whenever he actually does pass away, if it should be before me, some jerk is going to call me up and say, well, how does it feel now that he's really, you know, this thing? That's my nightmare.
Oh, my God. Speaking of nightmares and funny, happy things, I want to ask this of you and some of the other writer folks who are there. I'm talking, by the way, to Too Slim of Writers in the Sky. And I mentioned with Joey, funny, crazy things that happen on the road since we've been touring for 30-plus years. A great funny anecdote of something that happened on the road.
An anecdote of something that happened on the road. I've been left behind. You know, I could do my own series, you know, the Left Behind series. I could do my own series of Left Behind because I get off the bus sometimes in the middle of the night and you know, go get a cup of coffee or use the facilities or whatever and come back and the bus is gone. I've been left and I've had to hitchhike down the road and I've run screaming after the bus, waving my arms and they of course have no, and then I've hitchhiked up trucks to try and get onto the gig and whatnot. So I've been left, I think, 7 times.
Don't you guys do a head count? I mean, they start doing that in elementary school, you know?
And some of these were back when there were only 3 of us, and we were in a van, and I was still being left. So I've begun to think that maybe it's me. Maybe it's not. So what I do now is when I get out of the bus and somebody, the driver, is gassing up or whatever, I make eye contact. It's like, hey, I'm here. I'm not in there.
Oh, that's...
But we should have a head count. We should have a little things by the door that you could turn the, you know, like when the boss is in and the staff is in, how they turn that little thing up the wall that says that they're in. That's what we need. We need a little cowboy on his horse there. When he's not on the horse, then you know he's not in the bus.
Oh, wow, especially after all these years. Riding through the neighborhood, it's Ranger Doug, Too Slim, and Joey the Cow Polka King, 3 of the 4 performers who make up Riders in the Sky. Do you guys have a couple more minutes to spend with us, I'm hoping?
Do we have a couple more minutes here? We certainly do. We've got nothing but time. We're heading to Lewiston for the big Montana Cowboy Poetry Gathering.
Ooh.
And so we have a few more minutes. But we're in the mountains here. I hope we keep our signal here.
So far, it's been good. So, I mean, we're in the mountains here, too, almost, in Greeley, Colorado. I'm wondering if I can talk again to Ranger Doug of Writers.
Ranger Doug is still here, and I will turn you over to him.
Oh, boy.
Thank you.
Hey there, Ranger Doug on the wire.
Hey, Ranger Doug. Have to ask you about your very, very special skill, aside from being amusing and fun and a good singer and all that, but you're known level for your yodeling. Is that genetic, or is that a learnable skill?
I have no idea. I presume it's, if you can break your voice at all, I presume you can learn it. Like playing the trumpet, you know, it's pretty awful at first, but once you're able to control the intervals, you can, you know, sound interesting. Not necessarily good, but interesting.
Well, I guess that's something you would take pride in. Is there a certain kind of song where the yodel is appropriate as opposed to not, within the boundaries of Western swing?
Well, you can overdo it, I'll put it that way. As far as the genetic component, mm-hmm. My uncle, Arvid, who was, he and my uncle Hank both played guitar, and Arvid yodeled, and so maybe there is a genetic component, but I don't know.
Huh. And question for Ranger Doug, and it's about the band as a whole. I mean, we see you got the two Grammy Awards for albums that were for companion pieces to animated films, and I feel like Writers in the Sky definitely has this great audience for young children and kind of young teens, and then of course you've got the 50-plus crowd, but how do you get that middle, that elusive middle group of almost middle-aged folks and people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. Do you find them at your concerts? And how do you go after that audience?
Well, I think that that's where the humor comes in most strongly in the full realm and spectrum of our show. I think the kids love the feel and the look and the funny stuff. The older folks view it with some nostalgia and remember their parents singing it to them. The middle people like to laugh. Everybody likes to get away from the debt ceiling and the mortgage and the surly teenagers and come out and have a little fun, and that's how we get the middle group.
And can I ask, who came up with the whole shtick of the cowboy way?
I wouldn't call it a shtick, however. I would call it a way of life.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Too Slim came up with that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that had nothing to do with cowboys, but except that we were on stage, and the night that Red Savine, the great country singer, died, he said, like to, you know, acknowledge the great passing of the great Red Savine. He wasn't a cowboy, but he did it the cowboy way. And we all looked at each other and said, we got a phrase here.
Because I remember that from
it lived on.
I remember that from the TV show, where, you know, at some point during every episode, you know, you're thinking about doing something, and it's like, well, we could do it that way, but it wouldn't be dot, 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 you know. So,
yeah.
I didn't mean to insult it by calling it shtick, but it was used in kind of a way as shtick. You know, it worked. It was a fun show. Did you guys enjoy doing the TV show?
I enjoyed it enormously. It was a real challenge, you know. We're simply amateur actors, and to suddenly be on network television as actors was, you know, it was a challenge indeed, but it was a really, it was a wonderful challenge, the kind you could always hope for. We had a great time doing it. Wish it could have gone on longer, but we had one wonderful year of being in Hollywood and making TV.
Cool. We're talking with Writers in the Sky. That's Ranger Doug answering questions about the TV show that they had on CBS a few years back. And I do have the question that I'm asking everybody for Ranger Doug. A cool, funny, weird, scary anecdote from the road.
I don't know that I know of any that are acceptable for family.
This is a college radio station. We can even use horrible language, so go for it, man.
You can use, okay. I'll have to think about that one. Nothing comes to mind immediately.
Oh, okay. Well, while you're thinking, I don't think I asked that question of Joey yet. So,
okay.
Maybe we can ask that question of Joey, and if you come up with one, we can go with it.
Okay, fine. Here he is.
Joey the Cowpolka King.
Hello.
Hi, Joey. This is Dave again. And sure. Just asking, trying to get from everyone a story from on the road that was scary or funny or weird anecdote, or it could be filthy. This is college radio. Go for it. Whatever you want.
Well, I would say the first time that I left Too Slim Behind was probably the scariest thing. And here's how it happened. Too Slim's wife had just made curtains for the bunks back in the old van.
Uh-huh.
And Big Gizmos, it was called back then. And Too Slim apparently got out. Well, he didn't apparently. He got out, and I saw him get out. But then I saw him get back in. But then he got out again, and I never saw that.
Yeah.
So I filled up the gizmo with diesel, and we took off. And I drove 250 or 300 miles.
Oh, man.
Not a peep in the bus. Woody was sleeping, Ranger Doug was sleeping, and I assumed Too Slim was sleeping. And I pulled into a gas station to fill up again and turn it over to Too Slim, and I pulled back his curtain, and he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I turned to Ranger Doug, and I said, Ranger Doug, Too Slim got in the bus. And Ranger Doug looked at me out of sleepy eyes and said, well, I suppose it means it's my shift. So I was going nuts. I mean, you know, Ranger Doug went in to get a cup of coffee and figured he'd continue driving after I was done, you know. And I happened to look in the distance, and here comes this tanker truck. And I look, and I see somebody waving at me, you know, from the passenger seat of this tanker tractor trailer. And who is it? It's Too Slim.
Oh, man.
It's arrived in a tanker truck, and just by luck, it gotten off at exactly the same gas station that I was at. And there was no way you could have seen that gas station from the freeway. It was just happenstance that they got off there. And in fact, he drove better when Ranger Doug's turn, and Slim drove, and everything turned out just fine. To this day, Slim is still sitting in this bus.
Well, how long ago was that? Because did you guys have cell phones at that point? I mean, you know, to call each other and say, hi, I'm not on the bus?
Well, there weren't cell phones back then.
Okay, it was a while ago.
This is 1989.
I gotcha.
If there were cell phones, they were huge things that we couldn't afford, nor could we carry on our backs.
And can I ask, are there any cool, funny anecdotes about audiences? You know, any weird moments where somebody running up to the stage, you know, throwing underwear at you or any kind of thing like that?
Well, you know, everyone, whenever we take pictures, everyone wants to be next to Ranger Doug. Of course, he is the idol of American youth. You know?
Of course, yes.
I mean, it's we're like, on stage, there's four of us, but really, the light shines only on one, because in the women's eyes, everyone wants to be next to Ranger Doug.
All right, well, that's nothing wrong with that.
You know. And, you know, like I tell you, I years ago, I've been on the road 15 years, and you know, I got into this business for the fellowship, for the women, and for the money, and also for the drinks.
Okay.
Things that don't seem to mean much anymore in my life.
Probably is that's what's keeping you alive.
by keeping me alive.
Lessening
for the lack
those.
Of
yeah.
Those things.
Well, did you have?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did you guys have groupies back in the day? I mean, was there sex?
No, never groupies. No. There was none of that hanky panky stuff going on at all.
Oh. Well, were you disappointed?
You ever read the Riders in the Sky book?
I'll have to grab a copy. I have not read it.
Yes, you should. It spells out a lot of things.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really good. But no groupie. I never had a groupie. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm a pretty upstanding moral kind of guy. And, what a bunch of
I heard that.
No, that was nothing. That was someone on the side of the road.
Sure. Well, can I ask you guys, and whoever wants to answer this would be fine, but do you ever get a little, you know, since again, you guys have these backgrounds, you're in colleges and doctoral degrees, and you've worked with U2, does it ever feel a little bit constrained or straitjacketed when you have to be a pretty G-rated, very light PG?
No, we do what we do because we love it.
Okay.
It never feels constrained. It never feels like we're in a box. No. And that's the great thing about our band. I'll tell you who feels like they're in a box when you listen to a country artist and all the guys in the band have to play the same licks that the people created in the studio do it every night the same way. We may play songs at every show, you know, but every time we do them, they're different.
Oh, that's cool.
The delivery of the comedy is different. We still laugh at jokes that we've heard for all these years because it's the delivery. It's, you know, it's Ranger Doug is a wonderful straight man, and Slim is just a great comedian, and it's one for us. No, never constrained, not one bit. No,
right.
And I think the people, musicians that come to see us marvel at the way that we treat our music. You know, we have fun with our music, but we never make fun of it. And
true.
And some of the things that happen are really out there jazz things, you know. And no, it's just never constrained. We love it. Really, like Slim said, I don't know if we're better than we ever were, but we love it as much as we ever did.
Well, audiences are loving you guys as much as they ever have. I know I can say that because I saw you all when you were playing in Greeley a few months back.
Sure,
and
sure.
Really enjoyed the TV show. I think I have one last question for you guys as far as who's sort of the main songwriter, or do you all take turns?
Oh, Ranger Doug, without a doubt, is the main songwriter. You know, he's the type of guy that will walk into town and write a song.
Oh, wow.
And Woody creates good songs. Woody really works on a song. He'll work on it and work on it and work on it and work on it, you know, for months and come up with something that's really, really beautiful. I think I can speak for Slim and I that we're the kind of guys that if there is a task that needs to be done, if someone comes and says, listen, guys, I need songs for this TV show or I need songs for the record, then we sit down and we write our songs, you know?
Right.
But Ranger Doug is, and I always say this always too, Ranger Doug is the heartbeat of the band, you know? Hmm. He is the guy, you know? And Slim, of course. And that's the great thing, you know. There's no guitar player that plays like Ranger Doug. There's no bass player that plays like Slim, and nobody that plays like Woody. And really, the four of us together, I can honestly say there is not a group in the world today that does exactly what we. I'm not saying that we're greater, but I'm just saying there's nobody that does what we do, and that's what makes it so special for us.
Well, it has been tremendously special talking with three of the four members of Writers in the Sky. I certainly want to also give a shout-out to Woody Paul, who could not be with us because he's shopping for a windshield wiper for the van. So, you know,
he's the bus whisperer. We call him the bus whisperer.
So, you know, he's in our spirits, even though he hasn't been with us, but it's been great being with Joey the Cowpolka King, Too Slim, and, of course, Ranger Doug of Writers in the Sky. Catch them in your city, and of course, on get their new CD, Beyond the Sun. Land Beyond the Sun, excuse me.
Land Beyond the Sun,
Land
that's
Beyond
right.
The Sun. And I just want to, if you have any last words or any last thoughts.
Well, we just want to wish you happy trails and ride into the sunset along with us and to continue our quest for great cowboy music.
Thank you so much, Writers in the Sky.
Thank you. Bye-bye.